Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Paul Schlaelein with a biblical perspective on helping the poor.
So if the Lord has blessed you with a nice house and nice things, thank the Lord for that. He gives good things to his children. But then also know that we have a great responsibility to use those things in the right way. So make sure that you do so with a good conscience. Make sure that you're generous with the money that you have. Not only give sacrificially. And I would say specifically, give sacrificially to missions.
Paul Schlaelein next. The fact that much of the world's population is poor is commonly known. But is there a Christian approach to poverty and helping those trapped in it? Join us as we talk with missionary to South Africa, Paul Schlaelein, about his piece, 10 Theses on Helping the Poor. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
Well, I guess the first question I just wanted to ask is a little bit about your work in South Africa, if you don't mind. What do you do?
Yes, I've been here along with my family for 19 years, my wife and 8 children. We live in a somewhat rural area in Limpopo, South Africa, which is near the border of Zimbabwe and Mozambique. We focus on planting churches, specifically indigenous churches. And I mentioned the word indigenous because I think it relates in some ways to our topic today. Indigenous is historically, and I would say biblically, defined as self-propagating, self-governing, and then that third one, self-sustaining. That is a church that can survive on its own financially. We want to plant churches like that. We have a classical Christian school. We have camps for young men and young women and a number of ministries. But we love the Great Commission work that the Lord has called us to. And so we minister each week in the Tsonga language, where we preach in Tsonga, sometimes known as Shangaan.
I've heard in the news that there's been some kind of conflict in South Africa. Do you guys see that affecting your work there at all?
Yes, we've written articles on this. In our minds, we actually see the village where we live as safer than the cities. South Africa is, in general, a very dangerous country. There's a lot of murder, rape, crime, especially in the cities. And then what you're probably referring to would be the farm murders, which are common, and that is among farmers. But we are not in either of those two settings. We're just in little Tsonga village. Our neighbors cook over an open fire. So we feel relatively safe in this country, and we thank the Lord for it.
You wrote this article about how to help the poor. I don't know, maybe this is an obvious question, but what kind of prompted you to write the article?
I would say a couple things. One is the Bible talks a lot about money. I love the Bible. I love exegeting the scriptures. I love talking about these major topics. If you love the Bible and you love to explain the Bible, you're going to have to talk about money because the Bible talks a lot about money. So that's one. Two, and probably more practically, as a missionary, I see a lot of poverty. For example, I just came back from Malawi. Depending on what stats you read, some people say it's the 8th poorest country in the world. Others I've read recently have said it's the 3rd poorest country in the world. But either way, it's very, very poor. South Africa, poor, of course, compared to American standards. But Malawi, which is a small country to the north of South Africa, is desperately poor. And then within that country, we were in the poorest place in that country, which you can make an argument. We might have been in the poorest place on earth. I mean, it was desperately poor. No electricity, like going way back in time. I'm not talking 30 years back in time, but hundreds of years, a lot of poverty. And so I see this kind of thing, and yet I see efforts to help poverty often done badly, seen it done poorly, if I could say. And I know that oftentimes people have the right heart, but they just do it foolishly. Or some people don't have the right heart. They're giving for ulterior reasons or receiving the money in the wrong way. So we really have to think carefully, not only in missions, but just in giving generally. What does the Bible command us to do? What are good resources for us to go to? How can we look at poverty relief from church history? Of course, from a biblical perspective, is the most important. So all of those things, throw it in the pot, stir it up, and that's my article. I just dealt with 10 theses, a brief article. But if I could have kind of summarized my perspective, if someone said, how should we think about relieving poverty? I tried to put those in a list of 10 so I could put my jersey on and let them know kind of what team I'm playing for.
You mentioned some of these villages that you've been to go back even hundreds of years or so. What does that kind of look like? What do they do? How do they survive?
Well, I'll just talk about my own place first. When I came here 19 years ago, I was a single man. I've been in some of the poorest places, even little islands like the Comorian Islands. And, you know, everyone had cell phones or technology, even the most remote places. So that gives you a little idea of the way technology has taken over. But I lived in a little shack for 2 years. I lived with the chief's second wife, not with her, but she was old enough to be my mother. And she would cook for me chicken feet and like porridge, which is kind of their staple food. It was a poor setting. And yet when I went to Malawi, and specifically kind of like the Lualaba area, first, it's difficult even to get there. We just take that for granted that if we want to move around, we can just get in our vehicle and drive. But the strip to get to that area is usually washed out sometimes 6 months of the year. They don't have drainage systems that work well. The bridges are constantly washed away. So during the rainy season, you can pretty much forget even driving to that area, which means the only way to get to it is on the lake. Lake Malawi is probably top 10 largest lakes in the world. So you have to get a boat. I took a boat there once. It was just a common kind of transport, and it was way overcrowded, 70 people. Everyone was just waiting for me to vomit over the edge. It took about, I don't know, 3 or so hours to get across in just this wooden boat. And I remember speaking to one of the fishermen. That's their livelihood, is fishing. And I remember they have these little 15 horsepower Yamaha motors that kind of putt-putt you across the lake. And I was speaking to one of the men, and I said, do you remember way back in the day when your great-grandfathers would use sails to get about in the boat? And they said, matter-of-factly, oh yeah, 2014. It's like 10 years ago. They were using sails. So that just kind of gives you an idea of, while technology is moving quickly, it's moving very slowly in some ways for them. Across the board, I guess it's moving quickly. Development is happening so much more quickly as compared to 1,000 years ago. Many generations would live the same way across hundreds of years. Now, over just 50 years, you're living much differently than your great-grandparents. But yes, it's very poor. I think Malawi probably lives on something like $600, $700, $800 a year, compared to the United States, which is something like $70,000 a year. So it's desperately poor. I think the poorest country in the world is Benin, which is something like 900 times less wealthy than Luxembourg, which is the richest nation in the world. Now, we look at that and we say, inequality, we need to fix this. And yes, we want to have a heart to help the poor. Jesus says, if you see someone without a tunic and you have to, like, share with him. And that's a command. So do that. We have a responsibility to help the poor. I love ministering in a poor area because you have opportunities to help those who are desperately in need. We shouldn't give with our eyes closed. We shouldn't give without any kind of plan. We shouldn't give without knowing why they're poor in the first place. Those are some things that I delve into in the TED Thesis.
A lot of people that go over across the, you know, they go build wells in Africa, this kind of thing, and they just give wells to them. I think you've mentioned, without getting too ahead of myself, a little bit about, you know, being a little more prudent than just giving things to people. What we see in America are these videos of like, oh, look how thankful these Africans are that we've built wells. How do you see this coming across the ocean, giving them wells, and then leaving? How do you see that affecting their spirit?
We need to go to the Great Commission, because that's what Jesus commanded us to do. The Great Commission at the end of Matthew 28 and wells. There is value of sending poverty relief, etc. But that is not the Great Commission. The Great Commission is teaching and making disciples of Jesus Christ. The Great Commission is sharing the gospel. The Great Commission is telling the world that they are sinners, they need Christ, and then gathering this group of sinners that have come to Christ and gathering them in local congregations. That's the Great Commission. As a help to that, there are times when we can start orphanages, we can help build roads, and we can start institutions, and we can dig wells, but that is not going to change people. In fact, sometimes it's going to harm them. There's a book that came out well over a decade now called When Helping Hurts. And I did on my blog something like a six-part review of that book. And it's got some serious flaws. But it does get the main thing right. And that is, oftentimes, helping can hurt. And let me give some ways that it can hurt. One is that it can create a dependency. And we see it even in the United States. Our system is built that the welfare program discourages people from working or increasing their income. Why would I want to increase my income when I'm already getting housing subsidies and I'm getting food stamps or whatever it may be? So we're actually going to incentivize them for not working and for not increasing their income by giving them handouts. So we did the same thing in missions as well. So we create a paternalism. We create a dependency on the kind of a victim's mindset. And we ought not to do that. They have a responsibility to care for themselves and care for their churches. What would happen if the faucet, if the tap in the West was turned off? What would happen to these countries? I think in the beginning, it would be like they were in a heavyweight fight and they were hit with a haymaker and it stunned them and they stumbled and they didn't know what to do. But eventually, I think they would get back on their feet and they would figure out a way. So we ought not to create dependency. That's the first one. Second, are we thinking about why they're poor? Like, why are we giving money to these poor nations? Oftentimes, the money that's given is it never gets to the people who actually need it. There's so much corruption. In fact, let me just give a perfect personal example. Like a lot of the clothing that is sold in Malawi, you can tell, you know, they're like Goodwill type clothing shops. They put it out a big container. It's something like, let's say, 2006 high school fine arts T-shirt that someone got 15 years ago, and they're clearing out their closet and they're put it all in a bin and they send it over to Africa, and then the Africans will sell them. Like, they're not like handing them out. They will actually take them. That becomes their business. They'll actually resell these clothing in order to make money. You'll see a lot of times the government officials, that's when they're driving the Land Cruisers. So there's a lot of deceit that happens, a lot of corruption. We have to be very careful with that as well. And then you think of digging wells. In some ways, that's been good. World Vision digs a lot of wells, but I don't think that World Vision is doing much to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. What we really need for these poor areas, everyone is poor, that is poor in spirit, and they need the Lord Jesus Christ. And once the Lord Jesus Christ saves them and they're starting to read the Bible, then they're going to find out the way out of poverty. Now, the way out of poverty, ironically, one of the greatest prosperity preachers in the world is a man named Bushiri. He's ironically from Malawi. He is insanely rich. And the prosperity gospel teaches that Jesus came to earth to make us healthy and wealthy. He came to take away our sickness, our cancer. If we're barren, he wants to give us twins. If we have a bicycle, he's come to give us a nice vehicle. That's not the way out of poverty. The way out of poverty is not sowing a seed, as the prosperity gospel, by the way, which has come from the United States. That's a false gospel. The way out of poverty is by following the character traits, primarily in the Proverbs, working hard, increasing the nation's GDP, saving your money, character traits like that. That's the way out of poverty. So we have to be careful that while we give to those who are in great need, absolutely, we need to be sure that we're keeping these character traits in front of them.
Yeah, a lot of what you said sounds great for maybe Christians who have a solid grasp of like what the Bible teaches us about who we are and all this. But it might sound very callous to American culture that just kind of wants to, that just thinks the solution is to, I guess, you know, just give away money. So I guess to that end, where are we going wrong as a culture in America that we just think that indiscriminate giving is the solution?
Well, first of all, I think the world is always going to find Christian principles calloused. The unbelieving world does not think like Christians. So we have to keep that in mind. Second of all, remember it's a Bible verse that says if you don't work, you don't eat. Like, that's actually in the Bible. So, yes, we have to distinguish what we're giving money to. So let's say there's a cyclone or a hurricane or an earthquake that goes through a nation. Yes, we can send money to help them. Absolutely. That's a natural disaster. Let's give money to help natural disasters. But do you know the billions, the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been sent to Africa over the last several decades, and it hasn't changed the nation? So if someone looks at this and says, it's calloused, I would say the proof is in the pudding. You're not helping the nation. All you've done is you've made presidents and big government officials in general, you've just made them more wealthy, but you're really not helping the people. What you want to do is teach the people how to increase the gross national domestic product of their nation. So those are some important principles that we want to follow. In fact, don't just take my word for it. If I sound callous, by the way, it's easy to sit in your armchair. I'm thinking about the average American. They sit in their armchair and write a check, and they're telling the missionary who's actually left it all and gone to the people. It seems ironic that they would call someone like that calloused. But be that as it may, just take, for example, the words from Dambisa Moyo, who wrote a book on foreign aid. I think she called it Dead Aid. Now, this is an African, and she wrote a book, and her argument was that the number one cause of poverty is foreign aid. Now, I think that's simplistic. I don't think that's the right answer, but she's actually on the right track. She was seeing the problems with foreign aid that people thought this would just fix all the issues. Remember, man's hearts are sinful, and man is not going to use the money properly if they don't have new hearts. So we have to make sure that we give it in the right way. What I think is better, and if I can just give your listeners kind of a guide to some good books to help them on the way, we only have a brief time to talk here. So if you want more information, one would be Poverty of Nations. That was written by two men. One of them is theologian Wayne Grudem. They give many reasons, several dozen reasons of what to do to bring a nation out of poverty. And it's not just one simplistic thing. Remove foreign aid. That'll fix the problem. They say there are moral reasons. There are economic reasons. There are educational things that we can do to bring a nation out of poverty. So that would be a good start. Of course, Thomas Sowell, I'm a Sowell man. So he wrote a number of books. One is a largest book, Basic Economics. That's an excellent book. Of course, Randy Elkhorn has written a lot of books on money. Neither Poverty Nor Riches is another excellent book. But if I could suggest one, it would probably be Wayne Grudem on Poverty of Nations. And that really unpacks the ways that a nation can come out of poverty. By the way, if I could say, R.C. Sproul, many years ago, he gave a talk, and he was talking about like giving to the poor. And this was actually the first time I'd heard it. And it's sad that it was the first time I'd heard it because I was in my 20s. But he talked about giving money, and he said, we need to ask why a person is poor. If a person is poor, like we said, because of natural disasters, yes, that's going to help us. But if that person is poor because, you know, they're out gambling or they're living a profligate lifestyle, the solution is not to give them more money. The solution is to give them the gospel, to show them the error of their ways. And so the solution is to see their character changed. So that would be a good anecdote from R.C. Sproul on that point.
Mm-hmm. To that point, actually, that you mentioned, I did want to ask about discerning why a person is poor. How can we as Christians set an example and discern without prejudice, especially here in America, where it's maybe not quite so clear cut as, you know, in Africa? I'm sure a lot of people are poor because they're hard up, because their government oppresses them, because of famine, whatever. Yes. It is. In America, it's not quite that clear cut. So how can we discern without prejudice whether someone we come across in our path who's poor is one kind or the other?
Well, that's difficult to do because you can't, who's going to be able to go around and research every country? That's why I think the best way for, you know, Americans to use their money is to support missions, support Great Commission. Now, if you're saying, well, what about the businessman in New York who's, you know, and he's an atheist, what do you say? I can't really talk to him. My concern is for Christians. And the best thing that Christians can do is, if I can come back and now point the gun at them, since I've been talking a little bit about the poor use of money on the poverty side, but if I can talk now to the American Christians, there is so much materialism in the United States. If I could say perhaps one of the greatest sins that I see in America is just the overwhelming materialism. We have such soft, easy lives. Not everyone, but in general, the nation as a whole just has a very soft, cushy life. And I would say turn away from that. Jesus called us to take up our cross. Jesus has increased our salaries, not so that we can use that money to move from a decent vehicle to, you know, a Rolls Royce. Maybe he's increased our salary so that we can ascend it around the world. But I think the best way to send it around the world is not to world vision to dig wells. It would be to send out missionaries. A part of your local church, send out missionaries. You can't know all of the inner workings of Saudi Arabia and South Sudan and Benin and Botswana and these countries, Indonesia, around the world that are poor. You can't possibly know all these details. What you can do is send out missionaries that need support, that need to be financed so that they can share the gospel of Jesus Christ. So send out missionaries, send out 2, 3, 4, 5. We live in a society now. In the past, you could only give your money to societies. That's the way they did it in the 19th century with William Carey. They would just give their money to societies, or Southern Baptist missionaries often will put it in one big pot. In our particular Reformed Baptist world, you often will support missionaries individually, either by sending it through the church or individually. It's a great way. We need missionaries around the world. And as they are preaching the gospel and establishing churches, yes, along the way, they'll be able to logically, knowledgeably help those who really need it, not help those who don't. For example, just today, I received a note that said, there's a couple people in our churches that are just desperate. They need help. And it was so easy for us to give several boxes of food to these particular people. That's because we're on the ground. How can Bob or Sally from America possibly know the right place for that food to go? I'm not sure they can, but they do trust us to use those finances. So we could never do that without kind, generous, faithful Christians in America sending money so that we can ultimately on the ground help them. I'm not sure that they could really give intelligently all the way there without a middleman, someone like a missionary.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that maybe we as a culture can learn from the impoverished?
Oh, absolutely. Poor people generally are a lot happier. Not always. We shouldn't think the poorer you are, the happier you'll be. I'm glad that I have a warm bed and a house to live in. I'm glad that I have a vehicle to drive. I'm glad for the education that I received. That's in many ways made me happy. So I'm thankful for those things. But money has a way of weighing us down. Scripture speaks about that. It can tangle us up. Money has a way of tangling us up in the things of this world. And that's why we're told not to lay up treasures on this earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. And man, I will say some of the happiest, most joyful church services that I've been to, some of the happiest people that I've ever seen have been very poor. In fact, sometimes as an illustration, I'll tell our own people, just next time you're driving and you see, let's say, a Mercedes driving, just drive past the Mercedes. And I'm saying there's a really good chance there's a frown on that driver's face. Now, I'm not saying people who drive Mercedes are miserable, but I'm just telling you reality. Normally there's going to be a frown on that person's face. And how many times have I followed a truck from behind and you see a group of ladies that are just sitting in the back and they don't have their own vehicle. They don't have their own bicycle. They're just sitting in the back and they are laughing and they are joking up. Explain that. In general, I've seen that's been true again and again. Ultimately, money does not make us happy. Jesus makes us happy. The things that count make us happy. Oftentimes, money just weighs us down and makes us more miserable. So again, it's not wrong to have money. It's not wrong to have nice things, but it's wrong to love those things. It's wrong to love those things more than Jesus. So let's make sure that we love Jesus more than anything else. Let's be generous with others. Let's give to others. You can see these 10 theses on my blog, Between Two Cultures, that'll delve into it specifically. But let's make sure along the way, as we give, that we give intelligently and that we don't love money. We don't love things. We love Christ more than all. My wife is a good example. She lived in, as a nurse, she worked at Vanderbilt Hospital. She had a nice condo. She was living the life, and she gave it all up to become a missionary among the Tongas. And I think the Lord will bless her for that. In fact, the Bible even says that. Jesus said, if you give up all, if you love Jesus more than your brother and sister, father and mother, he will repay us 100-fold, not only in the next life, but in this life. I would say in spiritual riches. And we've seen that again and again in our own ministry and are very grateful for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're kind of coming to the end of the time, so I guess I'll just throw out, is there anything else you want to add to the discussion that I haven't asked about that you wanted to impress on our listeners?
I would say there's no greater thing in all of life than to have a clear conscience. And if God has called you, because I don't want to give a guilt trip here, like, oh no, I have wealth, and most of the people listening to this probably have good jobs in America. I'm not here to give a guilt trip. If God has called you to your task as a veterinarian or as a mother or as a father, or as a businessman or a lawyer, praise the Lord for that. But remember, to whom much is given, much is required. So if the Lord has blessed you with a nice house and nice things, thank the Lord for that. He gives good things to his children. But then also know that we have a great responsibility to use those things in the right way. So make sure that you do so with a good conscience. Make sure that you're generous with the money that you have. Not only give sacrificially. And I would say specifically, give sacrificially to missions. And then if I could say on the other side, we need more missionaries. And there are some people who might be part of a job right now in corporate America, but they feel as though God has given them gifts to be a missionary around the world. You'll never be totally happy until you follow God's will for your life. And that might be leaving it all, selling your things, leaving your job, and going among the least reached places around the world that need the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when you have a clear conscience, knowing that you're following what God has called you to be, whether that's a radio host like yourself, or a lawyer, or a doctor, or maybe, for some people like myself, a cross-cultural evangelist, which we call a missionary, to go among the poorest places of the world to share the gospel. When we're following what God has called us to be, that is when we are most happy. That is when we have most fulfillment. That is when we have most joy. And I can say that's true for my life, that the Lord has blessed me abundantly. There's nothing that I would rather be. I feel like I'm the richest man in the world. I think of Lou Gehrig, who said, as a New York Yankee, I'm the luckiest man in the world. I feel that way for myself. I'm the luckiest man in the world. I'm the most blessed man in the world to be a missionary. I'm very grateful for those who have means in America, who have given generously so that we can give our lives to share the gospel around the world.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Paul Schlaelein, missionary to South Africa and author of the piece, 10 Theses on Helping the Poor. You can read it by going to betweentwocultures.com. Between two is spelled out, T-W-O, cultures.com. You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, missionary to South Africa, Paul Schlaelein. We've been discussing his piece, 10 Theses on Helping the Poor. You can read it at rootedthinking.com. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Van Miler on Christian colleges standing on formative education.
So you are being formed by their example, by their worldview, how they teach, the culture of the university, the chapels. Like at the university I went to, we had chapel three times a week. That was very formative. We had great speakers that would come. Everything was built around building a biblical worldview and staying centered in Christ. So I think that's really, the formative part is really important, because what you're forming is you're forming the values and the worldview, biblical worldview clarity for life.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.